Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Welcome to today's Business Matters with your host, Professor David Harding, examining the art of selling. The traditional image of a salesman is usually that of a highly driven individual who often puts personal gain above the needs of their customers. So the images which tend to spring to mind, perhaps unfairly, are the typical double glazing salesman or potentially the vacuum cleaner salesman. However, is this traditional perception unfair? And how does this perception compare to today's modern sales professional? To explore this subject further, I would like to welcome our guest today, Cheryl Harding. Cheryl founded Effective 8 Limited in 2006, and she specialises in sales consultancy, often working closely with C-level managers to help them transform their sales capabilities and ultimately their top-line growth. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you very much for having me.
No, thank you for joining us today. Cheryl, if I could just start out by asking you to perhaps summarise your journey into sales and also to share one or two memorable sales successes you've had.
Okay. My journey into sales, like most people actually in the sales arena, was accidental. I did not grow up wanting to be a salesperson. I wanted to be a political commentator or work in the civil service. But I paid for university myself. I worked three jobs to pay for it. And a friend of mine had worked in a sales program in America. And he said to me, why don't you come and do the sales program? That's how I pay for university. So rather naively, I said, okay. And off I went. And 25 years later, I've had a fantastic career so far in sales and have loved every bit of it. So I started off as a salesperson, then I became a sales manager, sales director, and I managed 150 salespeople, 35 managers in six time zones.
Wow.
And okay. Over 10 years, we averaged 33% growth per year, which, you know, was a great accomplishment, actually. Got a few international awards in the process, including International Sales Professional of the Year. And after that, I pitched the board of the corporation that I worked with on setting up a consulting company. They already had nine companies in the group, and they agreed. So we set up a consulting company called SBR Consulting, spent 5 years growing that. And then 10 years ago, I decided to work for myself and have loved every bit of that as well.
Fantastic. That's it's from my perspective, it's quite an unusual story to hear a career in its entirety in one function or in the sales function. Could you perhaps share one or two memorable sales successes with us?
Oh, absolutely. There are loads and loads of disappointments as well. But I think one of the biggest successes that I ever had was when I went into a sales prospect meeting where they had asked for some sales training. They'd asked very specifically for some negotiation sales training, and they wanted 2 days. And I went in to meet with them, and instead of saying, yes, we'll give you the negotiation training, we spent an hour and a half exploring why they wanted it, what their issues were, and we realized that they didn't need negotiation training. They needed a whole induction program for their salespeople, and the problem was more in the front end than the back end. So rather than a 2-day workshop, we walked out with a year and a half program that was $150,000.
Wow.
So, okay. But more importantly, the reason it was a success isn't the size of it. It was more because we gave the client what they needed, which was different to what they wanted.
So it's
and
that
I think
perception.
That's a big thing in the sales arena. And people often think that good salespeople know how to do the opposite. They'll sell anything to someone. That's not good sales.
That's interesting because it picks up on the earlier point I touched on in the opening about perceptions.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting about your experience you just outlined is the idea of that the symptom isn't necessarily purely, sorry, that the root cause doesn't necessarily shine through in the symptoms you sometimes see.
Absolutely, absolutely. there's a sticking plaster approach in the sales arena, and it frustrates the living daylights out of me. So when they look at sales processes, a lot of companies, they want something that fixes something. And when you look at it, it's not the problem there at all. We have to go right back to look and say, well, what are you even trying to accomplish? What is your sales strategy? Do you have one? If not, let's get the sales strategy together, and then we can work out what you need from there.
Interesting. So it's moving away from the tactical short-termism.
Yes.
Into a more strategic, holistic type of approach.
Yeah, I mean, the analogy I use is a jigsaw puzzle. So I always ask people, what's the very first thing you do when you do a jigsaw puzzle? And what do you think they say?
I personally would say the corners or the outside.
Yep, that's exactly what they say. But it's not the right answer. First thing you do is look at the picture. And often in the sales arena, people are trying to put the edges and the corners together without knowing what the picture is. So I have to help them step back, look and say, right, what is the picture you're trying to accomplish? And then everything else builds in from there.
Falls from there. Interesting. In your time in sales, would you say that the role of the sales function in an organization has changed a lot in the last, say, 10 to 15 years?
Dramatically. Absolutely, okay. Dramatically. So I'm going to really simplify things a minute. So if I simplified sales into two arenas, transactional and consultative, from a buyer's point of view, transactional sales is I need a widget. I know which widget I need, and I just need to figure out where it's the best place to get it. So it usually comes down to speed and price.
Okay.
In a consultative arena, it can be, I'm not even really sure what the problem is, but I know there are several options, and I need somebody to help me think through those options and figure out the best solution. So if you think of those as two ends of a spectrum, where buyers used to be was a normal distribution curve. You'd have some at both ends, but most were somewhere in the middle. From a sales point of view, what that meant was that companies could take any type of sales approach and they'd typically hit with somebody. Now that curve, if you imagine a normal distribution curve, it's completely inverted. So companies are polarized. They're either in the transactional arena or in the consultative arena, okay. And there's no middle ground. The same company can be in both ends for different things. So an example would be a company could be in the transactional arena to renew software licenses. They would be in the consultative arena because they're running out of data center space.
Right, okay.
But they're polarized, and that's had a really, really significant impact on the sales arena. Because in that transactional arena, the function of the salesperson is disappearing. It's more automated, and actually it's more marketing-led.
Ah, okay.
In the consultative arena, it's the opposite. The role of the salesperson is greater than ever before, and actually that's where the value is brought from the salesperson in that arena.
So it sounds like you're suggesting that modern technology,
yes,
or modern approaches to the use of technology is freeing up salespeople from the relatively speaking more mundane type of activities, the transactional activities, mm-hmm. And giving them the tools and the techniques and the breathing space to be more holistic in their approach, would you say?
Yes, although that would sort of imply that consultative is better than transactional. And it's not that one's better than the other, they're different.
Right.
So there's a real need in that transactional arena to still be ethical, to be a good salesperson, and I think that's the arena that people think of when they think of salespeople, and those negative images come into their mind.
Sure.
Good salespeople in that arena are worth their weight in gold, but it's just the function of the sales thing is diminishing to a large extent. So, for example, even if you bought, let's say you were going to buy a television, typically what would you do beforehand?
I think I would define the type of television I'd be looking to buy.
And where would you get that information?
The internet.
Yes.
Google.
Exactly.
Essentially.
So most people have price checked, they've looked at the spec, they've looked at the scope. So they're already further along the journey of buying than they used to be years ago. So the internet has been the big driving force for that transactional arena to become more automated.
So buyers now more informed.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
How would you, given that then, how would you describe an ideal sales process from a seller's perspective?
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Let me take a step back. People always say, well, what is the best sales process? And the answer is there isn't one. And that's the challenge because that's why it's not so much a science. There is an art and the process part to it. It depends on the buyers that you're after. So when companies define who their market is, their target market, you need to look at the buying behaviors of that market and then map that to a sales process. But the best sales processes, another analogy I would use is it's like a skeleton. If you look around the room, all of us have a very similar skeleton, but we look completely different. So a good sales process gives the company that strength that the skeleton would give, so they know that these are the steps that we would go through, but it enables somebody to wrap their personality around it as well and adapt it for different audiences.
Okay.
In that consultative arena, you have to build in a large part of it that is exploratory. It's not about your product. The conversations don't tend to be about your product or service. They tend to be more about the buyer's business and their business issues and their business needs. So you have to really build that into your sales processes, whereas a lot of companies still focus on features and benefits of their product.
I think from my perspective, it's a very interesting point, moving us towards the relationship aspect of sales and buyers.
Yeah.
Moving more towards developing a trusting relationship,
yes.
where arguably the discussion would centre more around the buyer's short-term and longer-term needs,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the seller's product or service offering being pushed onto
Absolutely.
The buyer.
Okay. Absolutely. Sometimes in that environment, one of the best things you can do is walk away from an opportunity because it's your service or your product doesn't fit it, or you aren't the right people to deliver it, or it's not what the buyer needs. You know, sometimes they think it is, but it isn't. And that's hard for companies to do because they think short term, they think, well, that's revenue lost. But in my mind, it's short term revenue lost, but you're gaining trust.
Which is longer term.
Absolutely, and if that buyer needs what you have, they will come back to you first.
Interesting. And in that context, then, what, again, based on your experiences, what sort of mistakes do sales teams tend to make?
They try and short circuit the process.
Okay.
So they go in with a solution without asking enough questions to find out what the person needs.
Right, okay.
And in the process, I'll give you an interesting story about it, but that first meeting with a new prospect, that should be exploratory. It should be all about asking questions, finding out about them. One of the biggest mistakes I see salespeople and companies making is they go in, the person's scheduled 60 minutes with them, and they spend 20 minutes talking about their company and the history of it. And that prospect doesn't care. They've probably done their research. They know you're credible or they wouldn't have given you their time.
Sure.
And they go into telling mode. So the terms that I would use is they create a selling atmosphere, whereas what they should be doing is creating a buying atmosphere. And they're very different things.
And is that down to the personal capabilities, the skill sets of the individual salesman, or is it down to experience? Or both, would you say?
A mixture of both and confidence. Sometimes people get their confidence from how much knowledge they have. So they feel when they go in that they have to have all the answers, they have to give the information, and they just download everything that they know. And there's no better way to turn a prospect off than to do that. If they flip it in their head and they realize that the best salespeople ask the best questions.
Okay, so is that sense of curiosity or genuine
Absolutely.
Curiosity?
I think one of the benefits that I've had in my sales career is I'm really nosy. I love to know how businesses are set up, what their structure is like, what their challenges are, how they're doing and their goals. So I just ask a truckload of questions. And then I know when I can help them and when I can't.
But it shows good willing on your part in that context, that you're willing to make the effort to understand their needs and wants.
But to me, you can't sell effectively if you don't do that.
Interesting. Okay. We have some raised hands in the audience, so we'll take one quick question, if we may.
With regards to transactional and
consultative
selling, when one applies for a job, they're technically selling. So under which one of those ends of the spectrum would that fall under, therefore be able to, enhance themselves by the very arts of selling transactionally or consultatively?
Do you know, that's a brilliant question, absolutely brilliant question, because it would be really easy to fall into a transactional arena because you're in an interview, you're selling yourself, and you feel that you have to then download all of your experience. And here's what I do. Selling consultatively doesn't have to take a 3-month process. That in that interview, I would still go into consultative mode because consultative is about questions. Mm. And sometimes if you can leave a person thinking, I wouldn't have thought of that, or that's a really good point they made, that's got me thinking, you're more memorable than someone who is just imparting information. Does that make sense?
So it's more consultative.
Yeah, I would. You think about it, you're trying to get a job, so it's the start of a relationship.
So in that context, that would suggest that the seller, the potential employee, would have to have done their homework beforehand.
Absolutely.
To be able to present that.
Absolutely.
That informed buyer-seller conversation.
Absolutely. Okay. I would never go into a selling situation, whether that be an interview or whether that be with a prospect, without having done my homework.
Excellent. Okay, thank you for that question. Good question. I'd like to move on to a point we touched on earlier about the changes in the selling environment over the last 10 years or so. Are you in a position where you are spotting emerging or new trends which may impact sales teams going forward? So do you foresee any new challenges on the horizon for people going into sales or existing sales teams?
Yes, and actually I think it's quite an exciting time for sales. So over the last 10, 15 years, there's been a big change. And Professor Neil Rackham, who I would consider the global expert on sales and marketing, has done a lot of research in that. But obviously, recently in Britain, we've had a bit of a situation with the Brexit vote. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exciting for the salespeople. And I'll explain what I mean by that. The day after the Brexit vote, there was a bit of shock. Even people who voted Leave, I think, were a bit shocked that the whole country had decided. So people did one of two things. They either sat and pontificated, or the salespeople, that are good salespeople, got on the phone. And they got on the phone, especially if their company exported, they got on the phone with their prospects. There were opportunities that were maybe sitting in their pipeline, and they used the exchange rate to start closing some opportunities and closing deals. And what I've seen recently, which excites me, is there's a spark in the sales arena that maybe wasn't as bright for before. And it's because a lot of companies, they can't keep doing the same thing. And they realize that. So now they're starting to think, well, what do we have to do? And that innovative thinking, that imagination, that entrepreneurial spirit that is there, it has reawakened. And they're starting to look and say, well, hold on, what should we be looking at? Which countries are going to be signing trade deals with the UK? Well, how do we get into those countries? How do we export to them? What should we be thinking of 2 years down the line? Whereas I think there was a bit of complacency with companies before of, well, Europe's there, it's easy, and we export to it, so hey ho.
So it's opening up the whole arena to innovation, perhaps more forward thinking type conversations.
Absolutely. And you know, it doesn't matter how good your product or service is if you cannot sell it.
Interesting. Okay.
So to me, sales is the lifeblood of an organization. And if a company has a sales culture, and I don't mean by a sales culture, you see it sometimes in organizations where there's just these egos walking around where these salespeople think they're just everything. That's not what I'm talking about, but just this culture of every person in that organization is an advert for that business. Every person is involved in the sales process and they've got the sales culture. Those are the organizations, I think, that are absolutely going to be
successful,
growing double-digit growth year on year moving forward.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Do you see any specific changes in the relationship between sales and marketing departments, for example?
There should be. And in a lot of organisations, there is a better relationship because sales and marketing should fit together. They're two sides of a coin. In some organisations, though, you've got this rift and they blame each other. So sales blame marketing for not producing enough good leads. Marketing blames sales for not following up on the leads that they did produce. And it shouldn't be like that. So I think moving forward, companies are getting smarter with it. But frustratingly, it's not as quick as it should be.
As perhaps ought to be. So it's recognising the interdependencies between the two.
Absolutely.
Broadly speaking then, how would you advise organisations who are planning to boost their current sales capabilities? Is there a tried and tested formula you actually adopt? Or does it depend?
Yes, it depends on the organisation. But the first thing you do is start with that picture. The first thing you do is say, what is our sales strategy? Sometimes companies think if they just stick another salesperson in, they'll get more business.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And also, what type of salesperson do you need? So sometimes the SMEs, they see somebody whose CV has some of the big names on it, and they think, oh, great, you know, they've worked for some of the big companies, let's get them in. But sometimes that salesperson's been used to having that brand open doors for them.
Right, okay.
They get into an SME and that doesn't work. So I think a lot of times it's just stepping back, don't rush into it, and make sure you've got the foundations in place, and then you can really build a fantastic sales capability.
How would you therefore describe a successful sales team? So if, for example, you were walking into a brand new organisation and you were walked into the sales department, is there anything you would be looking for which would tell you fairly quickly as to how successful the function is?
Yes, actually, if I have visibility and if I have predictability in the pipeline, then you've got a well-functioning sales team. If the sales pipeline is erratic, you've got feast or famine, or you've got a lot of times CEOs or MDs say to me, I keep being told these opportunities are coming and then they just disappear. To me, that means that there isn't a good sales process, and usually there isn't a good qualification process at the front end of the sales process. So it's really, visibility and predictability are usually giveaways. To the health of the pipeline.
Okay, interesting. Thank you. What tips and advice would you therefore offer somebody who is planning to go into a sales career?
I would say go for it, but I would say go for it with your eyes open, because you go on an emotional roller coaster in sales. There are absolute highs and there are lows. So in sales, there are only four things that happen. You know, it's not rocket science, which is probably why I've succeeded in it. There are four things and only four things that happen. We win quickly, which is really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't happen that often, but it's very exciting. We lose quickly, which isn't nice, but it's over and done with quickly. We win slowly, which is great, but it's sort of more of a relief. And we lose slowly. And the losing slowly is the one that kills you, and it also hurts the organization because you've got the full cost of sale without any of the revenue return on it. And when that happens, and you can minimize that with good processes, it'll still happen sometimes. And that's when your attitude, if you're not careful, can drop off a cliff.
Okay.
And your confidence can start to go. So you have to go into it with your eyes open and knowing that when that happens, you need to learn how to pick yourself up and just go for it again.
So that suggests that perhaps in order to be successful or in order to have some longevity in a sales type career or focused career, that you need a strong senior leadership team around you to recognize those ups and downs, let's say, of an individual's career and can mentor you through those times.
Absolutely. I mean, I was really fortunate in my career. Because I went to America originally and I got trained over there, we were being trained in things that in the UK people weren't even talking about. So we not only got product training and sales process training, we also got training in goal setting and mindset. You know, any football fan thinks that Ian Holloway invented the term bounce back ability. But in the sales arena, we've been using that for decades, you know, so we learned about bounce back ability. And I went over, I was working in Nashville, Tennessee, and I was getting this training on attitude. Over in the UK, my family thought I joined a cult. You know, that type of thinking just wasn't around. And that, to me, is some of the best training that you could ever have.
Okay. And is that a cultural approach or difference between the US and, say, the UK or Europe?
I think there is a difference, but it's not as big as people think. I think it's just that was recognized quicker over there, not just in the sales arena, but with their sports people as well. You know, their sports people were trained to have that winning mindset, and whereas in the UK, I think we thought that was a bit sort of cheesy.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas now you look at our successes, you look at Andy Murray, you look at the women's hockey team, you look at our real sporting legends, and actually they not only have the skill level, but they've got that attitude.
So it sounds like you're saying that potentially we as British people have learned to not be embarrassed by success, but perhaps celebrate success in a positive, constructive way.
Yes. Yeah, and there's a difference between confidence and arrogance. And
yes.
I think in the UK, we're starting to understand that and celebrate our successes without it being seen as arrogant, and understand mindset stuff that you just have to, if you read those books that you can, I mean, there's a whole section on self-help books, and a big part of it's mindset. You just have to de-cheese it.
Okay. And be open.
Yeah,
to a process.
Be open to it.
Okay. What advice in terms of somebody going into sales as a career? How would you describe where that career can, or how that career can grow? In other words, where could a graduate or a new person into sales ultimately end up? What would that look like?
Well, the good news is they could end up anywhere. And that can be by design or it can be by default. But the great thing about a career in sales, and this is what excites me, is it's probably the most job security you'll ever have if you're good at it. Because when companies merge, when they do anything, they do not get rid of good salespeople.
Okay.
I have never seen a good salesperson be made redundant.
Because of the relationships they have with their buyers.
It doesn't happen because companies value that. At the end of the day, they need revenue.
Of course.
And if they have a salesperson who can bring in that revenue, they will always find a market for them. And even if companies merge and there are two salespeople who are really good that are in the same market space, they will figure out a different market space to give to one of them. They won't get rid of one.
Interesting.
So it's the great job security, but also it exposes you to some training in what I would call the success principles. So the things I've just described, like mindset, goal setting, and that can take you into anything.
So it gives you a great set of personal skills and tools, yes, and techniques,
yes,
to branch out potentially,
absolutely,
into other parts of the business.
And also, one of the things I'd love to help some of the graduates understand is that almost every career is going to have a sales element. Some people think that, oh, well, I'm not a salesperson, so I won't do. Actually, if you go into law, you go into consultancy, there comes a point when you need to sell. You go into any function, there is a point where you have to sell ideas, you have to sell the company, you have to, even teaching. People who go into teaching, a good teacher is a good salesperson.
Interesting. It's one of the subjects we teach here in the business school, or one aspect of one of the subjects is around personal brand and how to recognize that as individuals, we do have a brand which we will need to recognize, acknowledge and uphold post-graduation in the world of work. So you could argue that's a type of personal sales as opposed to teamy, target-driven type, yeah, financial sales.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely.
Cheryl, thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us today. I'd like to throw the floor open for any questions.
Not necessarily a question, but more additional to a point. So with regards to the last point, with regards to people not thinking themselves to be salesperson, they'll eventually, back to my earlier question, they'll have to sell themselves for the job that they apply to anyways. So
yes.
They'll have to at least learn some of the principles.
Absolutely. Everybody is in sales. I mean, I'm a parent. I'm selling every day to my 8-year-old, and she is a good negotiator.
That's the modern youth for us today, who are much more informed,
yeah,
more informed by us.
Yeah. I mean, she could negotiate her way out of anything.
Cheryl, thank you very much. And audience, again, thank you for your questions as well. Just remains for me to thank Cheryl for sharing your experiences with us today. It's very kind
welcome.
Of you. It's really insightful, and certainly for myself, you've taken a lot of the mystery out of the sales process and obviously dispelled some myths I certainly had myself as well of how you would describe a typical sales person. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
To our audience, so thank you for joining us today, and again, thank you for your questions. And it just remains for me to say, great session today, and we look forward to welcoming you to the next session on Business Matters, where we'll be discussing how big data, or the advent of big data, impacts the marketing process. So thank you very much.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.